Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James Show, and I was just noticing while I was going over things we'd talk tonight. I mean, you're about to meet Marilyn Singleton, MDJD, by the way, who is, as far as I'm concerned, more prepared to talk on Obamacare than anyone I've ever run into, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But while I was looking over a number of things, and of course, yes, we'll get to the mess in D.C. and everybody calling for gun control, but I run across a textbook from Denton, Texas, from a place called Guyer High School. It's the AP class, and they can't be the only school using this textbook, that's for sure. They didn't prepare it, but they use it. And I get to page 102, the first 10 amendments, and this is for high school advanced place history. The Second Amendment, you probably know what's coming. The people have the right to keep and bear arms in a state militia. I probably don't need to tell you what's wrong with that, and we'll go over that next hour. But that's exactly where we are right now, and it does fit with Obamacare and everything else, because when you don't have the truth on your side, you reframe the argument. We've talked a lot about the Hegelian dialectic, but Groucho Marx said it in a more humorous vein. Politics is the art of looking for trouble, finding it everywhere, diagnosing it incorrectly, and applying all the wrong remedies. Yeah, and that's the optimistic take. Marilyn Singleton is a board-certified anesthesiologist. She's a member of the AAPS. We talk to their members as often as I can manage it. Despite being told they don't take Negroes at Stanford, she graduated and earned her MD at UCSF Medical School, did 2 years of residency, anesthesia residency at Harvard's Beth Israel. These are, you know, obviously stellar places to study and to work. She was an instructor, then an assistant professor in anesthesiology and critical care medicine at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, before returning to California for private practice. While working in the operating room, which is trying enough as it is, she found time to attend UC Berkeley Law School, focusing on constitutional law and administrative law. See what I mean about she's prepared for this discussion? She interned at National Health Law Project, practice insurance and health law. She teaches classes in the recognition of elder abuse, which unfortunately is becoming more common, and constitutional law for non-lawyers. She recently returned from El Salvador, where she conducted makeshift medical clinics for two rural villages. I don't know where you find the time, Dr. Singleton, but I'm honored to have you. Welcome.
I am so glad to be on the show. Thank you.
You, as I say, I don't think there's anybody more in a position to talk about this, nor is there probably anybody more horrified by what's coming down. Recently, I read your article about Obamacare is about your money and not your health, and of course that's true, but as time goes on, what we're seeing is it's about your money at the expense of your health.
Well, that sure is the truth, and in so many ways, it was talk about something that was just hyped, and had very clever little sexy phrases to make you think it was going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. People are discovering now that it was just a big boondoggle, and it's only going to get worse.
a lot worse. October 1st is just around the corner. I know you've read the articles, like just last week in Minnesota, where some hapless guy got 2,400 Social Security numbers courtesy of Obamacare, unencrypted in the email. And it's just the beginning of what's going down. But what I'm very afraid of is just like years ago, you were in California for many years, so you're ultimately very familiar with Kaiser. And you remember many years ago when HMOs first started to be the rage, and they did satisfaction surveys, and Kaiser was crowing about how wonderfully they were doing until you limited it to the people who were sick, the people who needed their care. Then suddenly those numbers kind of went lopsided. And I fear the same thing here, that other than the sticker shock, which we'll get to, most people are not going to find out how dreadful this is until they need the care.
You're exactly right, and that tends to be the case all the time. One of the big things, and you know, we at AAPS are so focused on keeping the patient-doctor relationship and keeping individualized medicine, and that's a real key thing that is lost in the healthcare law. So many pushes for guidelines and on the electronic health records. The software has very specific things you're supposed to ask and which boxes you have to check in order to make them quote-unquote meaningful use electronic health records. So it's not just enough if you come up with your own system and just want to put your own histories and physicals online. They have to be the handful of software companies that the government has approved of. So you can see how much it's about control, not really about your health.
Yeah, it used to be the art of medicine. Of course, science was the underpinning. We wanted people who knew what they were doing. But what we really sought out were the people who were so experienced that they intuitively could look at us as an individual and say, aha, that aha moment. And that's what was so precious when you found the right doctor who understood what was going on with you. You look at so many conditions, such as autoimmune conditions, which I fight every day, that are not cookbook recipes. Every individual is different. And your best doctor is the guy or the gal who can look at you holistically as you. But it seems to me, as I read this, that if you're on Medicare, there might be a $50,000 fine for going out on a limb and doing something you think is best for your patient that isn't in the method that they've got.
This is a real problem. And there's, first, a really dirty little secret about Medicare that so many people don't know. And this changes the whole dynamic in the doctor-patient relationship. If you don't want to take Medicare Part A, you will lose your Social Security.
Right.
This has been litigated. The judge said, yes, it's a stupid rule, but this is what the rule says. So if people want to opt out of the system, just like there are doctors who opt out of the system, then they have to make that choice. I'll lose my Social Security. Well, nobody wants anyone to lose their Social Security just because they want to get a completely different kind of healthcare system. So this means they can't join one of these Christian shares or some of these things that are cropping up where people are trying to completely bypass the government and not have to go by their rules. It's terrible for a physician to have to worry, oh, if I do this, will I get in trouble? Will it not be paid for? Or have a patient say, gee, I'll pay you more. Can you just spend longer than 15 minutes with me? And you say, sorry, I can't. If you're on Medicare, it's health care fraud and abuse to extract extra money from you. And this is just wrong. It takes the choice out of the patient's hands. And many a patient would be more than willing to pay out of their own pocket and get exactly what they want out of the doctor and not a quick 10, 11, 12-minute visit.
This is beyond dangerous, as you say, and I know several friends of mine who have to make that choice. Am I going to take Medicare or not? And if they accept Medicare, these are the guidelines, and none of them are worried so much about not getting paid anymore. They're almost worried about going to jail or fines in the $50,000 range for the patient. And most people are not going to give up their Social Security. They didn't want to pay into it in the first place, but if they did, that was 15% of their income every year, and they say, gee, I need that couple of grand grand or whatever it is, can they manage to find like AAPS physicians who are not part of the Medicare scheme at all and go in their private pay, not use a Medicare card and say, yeah, I've got Medicare, but I'm not using it for this and you don't take it anyway? That's still okay, isn't it?
Yes, that's all right. And the biggest burdens and little tricks of the law are on the physician side, and that's one of the things that everyone, AAPS, suggests people get an attorney as a physician before you make these transitions, just to make sure you're okay with the government, because a physician can opt out, and a patient, if they're going to a physician who does not take Medicare, can pay out of their own pocket without being penalized in any way.
And usually wind up paying less, because that's another dirty secret about the cost shifting that's involved. When we talk about where prices have gotten so out of hand, what the retail rack rate is, so to speak, versus what Medicaid, Medicare, and then the Blues will reimburse, that can be a 90% difference.
Oh, definitely. And that's the great insurance secret. And there's a word for it. It's called moral hazard. When you have a third party paying for services, nobody cares what the true cost of the service is. When you get it back into a one-on-one transaction and suddenly somebody says, whoa, this visit shouldn't cost $150, and the doctor will say, okay, let's work it out. And so many of these guys and gals who have practices that are just direct payment practices end up having lower prices and spend more time with the patient.
What's the likelihood, because I think most of us believe that where Obamacare is going, this flawed system, is they want to usher in single payer one way or another, but what's the likelihood that they're going to outlaw these private relationships in the future?
Interestingly, Right now, it sounds a bit, oh, I don't know, probably not far-fetched to you, but sometimes when you say that to folks, they say, oh, come on. But just recently in Massachusetts, This will go into effect in 2015. In order for a physician to renew their license, they have to show the licensing board that they have a meaningful use electronic health record system.
See, this is what's scaring me.
See?
And this
that is now the law.
Yeah.
So talk about mission creep. The next thing it will be is that you have to abide by these rules or else you can't get your license renewed. And this is what scares us. We're scared that they may say you must take Medicaid and Medicare or you can't get your license renewed.
Right, and they'll claim that it's for the public good, because they always do, much like it's for the children. You know
it's for the children.
Yeah, right.
Of course.
It's the usual cries, but this is beyond dangerous. Unless you're listening and you're 92 years old, this is going to affect you most likely when you need it most. And for those of us who have been unfortunate consumers of the medical industry for many years, we know where this can lead firsthand. And this is, you know, what you've just said scares the living hell out of me. I got to tell you, we talked to a doctor last week who said, oh, no, it'll fall under its own weight. And I thought to myself, oh, please, dear God, let him be right. But I'm very afraid that Massachusetts portends what's coming.
That's right. And so many times, I mean, common sense tells you it'll fall under its own weight. But then we have two issues here. One, look at the history of various large federal programs.
Right.
I think it was H.L. Mencken that said the federal government, like any other organism, does not acquiesce to its own death. And these bureaucrats do anything to keep a federal program alive. And number two, and I really don't think this is far out, that this was designed to fail as step one to single payer, and that will be what becomes ushered in rather than going back to the old standard private practice setting.
And that's, of course, what Barney Frank articulated on the floor. He said as much, while Pelosi's saying we don't know what's in it till we read it. I have a feeling many of them did and knew this would fail.
Mm-hmm.
And this is...
interestingly, if you look at some of the provisions that went by the wayside, very early on the long-term care program right. that was written into the law. It just sort of disappeared. It's not out of the law, but the Secretary of Health and Human Services said, this looks unworkable. So there's no regulations for it, and it's just sitting there dead in the water.
Right, and that was one of the provisions that for many families was an economic necessity, and that, of course, disappeared. And then, of course, as we now know, for individuals buying health care on the market who are not yet of Medicare age and are buying individual policies, maybe they're in their 40s or 50s, the savior and what I consider to be real insurance as opposed to prepaid medical was a catastrophic plan. All right, the first 10 grand's on you. After that, we pick it up and gee your premiums, assuming you're reasonably healthy. They're only about $100 a month. Everybody wins. Well, that's
exactly
and that's illegal under Obamacare. Even if you have these policies now, most people around the country have gotten a letter I told them was coming that it doesn't matter if they want them, the insurance company will not be allowed to sell this.
Only if you're under 30. Age 29.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, or 29
right.
and
yeah.
below.
Right.
It's which is ridiculous. I had one of those policies my entire life being a self when I was
right.
once I became a self-employed person. And as you pointed out, the premiums are dirt cheap. You get full hospitalization after you pay the deductible. And if you look at it just from an economic sense, if you set aside in 1.5 years the amount that you were paying for that full bore health insurance premium, you have your deductible. So it's not like, oh, where am I going to come up with the $5,000, $8,000, or $10,000, depending on which one you pick. If you just saved your money, if you didn't buy a Starbucks coffee every day, you could come up with that. So it boggles the mind. And what boggles my mind even more is how people were so sucked in.
Yeah, and are allowing this to happen now. People like yourself who are going to be impacted tremendously by this. And as you mentioned in Obamacare is about your money, not your health, we're really not talking about health care. We're talking about medical care. But with health care, all of us have a good amount of control. We don't know that we're going to be struck down with something catastrophic. That's why the catastrophic policies are there. But in terms of controlling our weight, controlling our lifestyle, controlling our stress level or how we react to it, controlling our exercise, that's common sense and it's up to us to do. And no policy changes that. You talk about Obamacare and why should anybody bother to do any of that?
This is the problem. You hit the nail on the head. It's almost like you're training people to not be responsible for themselves anymore. Bit by bit, yes, I will be responsible for you, Uncle Sam says. And then pretty soon, it's bred out of the species to take care of themselves, because guess what? Even if I allow myself to weigh 450 pounds and smoke 3 packs a day, I am still going to be taken care of for the same price, other than a mild increase in smoking, which, by the way, California did not do with their premiums, that all premiums are the same, whether you smoke or not, that I think that that's just plain wrong. If people knew that they had some sort of financial price to pay for these bad habits, they might think twice about it.
Yeah, and also having to be covered for a number of lifestyle choices, such as covered for alcoholism or drug abuse. Well, if you don't drink and you've never done drugs, you're probably not going to need this coverage. Why should you be forced to buy it?
Exactly, but of course that has to fill the pool of reserves to pay for those who do smoke, drink, do drugs, etc.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, what happens when Ponzi meets Marx and all of these social plans. But socialism and its underpinning, and I don't care what they're trying to take over, always presumes that they know better than the individual how the individual should live their life. And what happens, what's extrapolated from that, is the victim is rewarded. And in your life, when I was reading about you you and Stanford, you weren't going to take that stuff. You achieved because you were able to achieve. It seems now that people are being told, oh, you can't achieve, so we must take care of you. And too many people are drinking the Kool-Aid.
That's right. And people live down to their expectations. And there's no question that this is done on purpose.
Yeah.
Because if you have a feisty populace, then you can't take control over them. And I think it's I'm actually kind of excited to be on the show today since it's Constitution Day.
Yes.
So it certainly is a chance to remind people that the Constitution put the power of the government in the people's hands, not the federal government's hands.
Right, and it's our forefathers who warned us we had a republic for as long as we could keep it. And what's happening now, I think, over the years, is people have become so, I don't even know what the right word is here for this, but they are in a situation where most people have become unwilling to be involved, either because they believe they can't be, that it doesn't matter, that the fix is in, or they believe they don't need to be, that people like us are kooks. But either way, the system has devolved to the special interests and to the Marxist, frankly, and here we are, and I don't know if we're past the return of being able to take our government back.
I hope that you are wrong on that
one. So do I. So do I.
I cringe to think that that's the case. I unfortunately know so many people who do believe that the fix is already in and it doesn't matter what you do, that nothing will change. And for so many things, that's the case. But every now and then, we see a bright light, and something has changed, something's rescinded because people spoke up. Look at the recall in Colorado.
Yes.
With those state senators who were recalled.
Right.
And, you know, so when you rile people up, and as perverse as this is, many people say something about this might be good, that it will get people angry enough, it will get people where it hurts enough that they will say enough and fight back.
I hope they're alive to do it. I want you to be right more, you know, just as I wanted Dr. Smith to be right that this would implode under its own weight. Yes, please, let me be wrong. But as I look at things like electronic health records, it scares the living hell out of me, not only for how they can be used, but, you know, for years people would not admit some of their deepest feelings, particularly psychologically, because of all the stigma. And we saw individuals like Thomas Eagleton, who's kicked out of the vice president nomination because he was treated for depression and all that. And these were some dark days. And we got to a point where many people felt that stigma was lifted. They could talk to their doctor with an electronic health record. Who in their right mind would walk in that office and say, I'm depressed?
Exactly. And this is one of the biggest things that we just hate, is this whole concept. And if you could see some of the checklists and sexual history,
yeah,
and this, that, and the other that are on there. And this is the type of thing when I would interview patients in Beverly Hills in the 80s. That was the cocaine days,
mm-hmm,
and everyone was using cocaine. And one of the first things you'd do is kind of, you know, you'd walk in with a chart and pen in hand. You'd close the chart, set down the pen, so you could sit there and talk turkey with the patient.
Right.
And it let them know that, okay, the whole world's not going to know, but I need to know to keep you alive during this surgery.
Well, see, this is so true. And I mention often that the anesthesiologists are the unsung heroes of medicine. They're the people who bring you back from death. I don't care what you're there for. Without the right anesthesiologist, you're sunk. This is where most anesthesiologists I've dealt with, I've wound up with the biggest bill because they're reimbursed so poorly. It's the check that I smile while I write because they deserve every penny and more. And I look at Obamacare, because, you know, by the way, as you know, you make mistakes, people are dead. You make little mistakes, people can be sick for months. So this is a very, you know, a very much an art. You need to know if they're on cocaine. That's a big thing. But what I'm afraid of is with Obamacare, I'm afraid it's all going to go to nurse anesthetists.
Oh, many people are already saying that the profession of medical anesthesia is down the tubes. There's been a recent regulation book that was put out by the VA hospital that wants to allow nurse anesthetists to practice in the hospital without any physician supervision at all.
Right, and you mentioned the VA, and as you well know, their licensing requirements are a little different than private practice. And
that's exactly right. You can work at the VA without having passed your board.
Yes, and you know, I always say you got two chances to die for your country: one on the battlefield, the other at the VA hospital. And it's you know, it's not far. And by the way, there are, as you know, there are some very good facilities, but they're also from facilities. So I wouldn't put an animal in them. So it varies. But the idea of the untrained, we're already seeing it even in the drug ads of don't ask your doctor, ask your healthcare provider.
And that's a term I refuse to use. I'm going to call a spade a spade. You're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're a physician's assistant, and people need to know. These days, people are getting PhDs in nursing and in physical therapy, so they can be called doctor, but there's certainly a meaning that people attach to doctor. They think that means someone who went to medical school, not someone with a PhD. You know, when you're in the healthcare environment.
Well, and in many cases, a PhD would be a luxury. A BA may be more like it. I occasionally will do a commercial for a client, and I'm not going to tell you where, but you'll relate to this, I'm sure. It was for one of those chains of fairly low-cost health clinics, and the tagline on it was, at whatever the place is, the doctor is in. Well, I questioned. I said, you got doctors, right? And it turned out they didn't. All right, and I said, I think that you better revise this. And so I got a note with new copy 2 days later, and then I had to say, at such and such place, your healthcare provider is in. And, I looked at it, and I swear to God, their healthcare provider, doesn't matter where it is, has a BA. And, you know, not even a BS. All right, I'm like, oh, my dear God. And, you know, maybe if you've got the sniffles, I'm not too worried. But again, if it's anesthesiology, this is not a cookbook. You need to be very exact to so many points of that patient that this is not the kind of thing that we can just, you know, handle to somebody and here's the manual. People are going to die.
The thing that's interesting as one nurse who then later went to medical school gave a talk at a family practice meeting, and she had said, I didn't know what I didn't know until I realized I didn't know it. And after going to medical school, and one of the things that I noticed, there were times in the operating room somebody would come in and I'd be with a resident. I'd say, you know, this person just doesn't look right, and they'd say, well, how do you know? And the little notebook is out, you know, 1, 2, 3. And I just said, I know, let's get another EKG and a potassium. And then lo and behold, something's horribly wrong with this person. And I said, that comes from experience. You see a lot of patients, and you have a broad background, because what I'm diagnosing has nothing to do with anesthesia. It has to do with something else entirely. But I knew it because I went to medical school.
Right.
And this is what's lacking when you have the so-called physician extenders kind of creeping out of the position where they should be working to help triage for doctors and kind of triage through the sniffles. But not take on some major diagnosis that just isn't what it was designed for.
And the problem is that when you're going to the doctor, and for some people it's not until probably a major diagnosis is pretty well forthcoming, because they've denied this for a year now, this is when you're not in a position to make decisions if you're hit with these rules, regulations, and all that. The time to think about this is before you're sick, so that people have a plan for this. We're talking with Marilyn Singleton, MD, JD, and of course we're talking about Obamacare, but ultimately it's not only about your money, it's your money at the expense of your health. If you have any questions, we want to hear them. 610-640-6400. We'll pick it up right there.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Indeed it is. Want to mention soap a moment, actually. You know, good old soap. Years ago, when hospitals discovered that there was an issue with regard to cleanliness, they started to use a lot of soap and things got a lot better. You know, it's not much different with you either. And today, there's so many other choices that aren't soap, so many things that are detergent that are nothing more than a group of chemicals that I hear from people, you know, itching, I've got skin problems, things like that. I'll tell you what, you go back to real soap. I'm not saying it's a cure, but it's sure a great first step. And there's a company in Oakland, California, the Five Star Soap Company, that's been making soap since 1947. Not only does it include none of the harsh chemicals, none of the detergents, the chlorides, the dyes, the ethanol, the sulfates, the sodiums, the formaldehydes, and fragrances, which can be another 4,000 separate ingredients. I'm not exaggerating on that. All of which are synthetic, I should add. They're soap. And when you get soap, you find a couple of things out. You find out that it may or may not make you feel better. It worked great for me. It's more effective. That was the part that was stunning, I thought. I, with four Bernese Mountain Dogs, was doing a lot of rug cleaning and using things that, you know, I wanted to leave the house after using some of this stuff. Went to using just the Dish Glow from Five Star Soap, and you know what? It was more effective on the mess. It didn't hurt the carpet, and best of all, it didn't hurt me. So whether it's hand soap or dish soap or whether it's laundry soap as opposed to laundry detergent, you know, you walk through the soap aisles at some of the grocery stores or other type retailers, and you're damn near coughing before you get out of there. Maybe you don't want to use that on your skin. Keep it natural. It'll work better, and maybe best of all, it'll cost you less. FiveStarSoap.com, FiveStarSoap.com. You can either spell it out or use the number. It doesn't matter. Check it out. They got a whole catalog. They'll send it to you if you'd rather get a hard copy by mail, 800-340-7091, 800-340-7091, and you tell them that Raleigh sent you.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
We're dialed direct 610-640-6400. We'll do it to it. We're talking with Marilyn Singleton, MD, JD, a woman who clearly knows every facet of what's coming down for us. And our only hope is that we're well enough to protest, to complain, to not take it. We've got exchanges opening in 2 weeks. Anybody have any idea how that's going to work?
It's very interesting. In California, they have now asked churches and various other folks to try to help guide people to the exchanges.
I find these navigators, maybe the most fascinating part of this when it comes down to doing damages to individuals. I just read where the former leader of Acorn is back on top. Maybe she'll be a navigator. You don't need any experience. You don't need a high school diploma. You don't need a background check, fingerprinting, or anything like that. And when you're certified after 20 hours of God knows what, you're able to access every piece of data that's ever been in any form, from credit cards to banking to Social Security records and numbers, of course, driver's license numbers. Who on earth would think this is okay?
I have to tell you, my husband called the 1-800 healthcare number, whatever it is, just to see what would happen. And he said he was calling from a neighbor's phone,
good,
just in case they were tracking phone
good
numbers.
I like them already. I would too.
And you know, and then he yells out, "Is it okay if I give your phone number?" You know, says, "No, my neighbor won't let me." And one of the first things the woman on the other end asked for was his Social Security number.
Right.
I just feel like, what do they say about not giving it out willy-nilly? And here it is. that that's a scary thought. That, like you say, you don't know who these folks are, and it's a perfect way to scam people. And I'm not saying that everyone is that way, but all you need is one or two.
That's
and
the point.
It sullies the whole system.
Of course. I don't think it's everybody either, but it's insane to think that you're going to find people off the street that you're paying $11 an hour to in some cases, and they're all going to be pure as the driven snow with no record and totally have only the best intentions. I mean, you know, it's. I guess if you believe that, you believe Obamacare is going to work. But, you know, the other thing is if you're older and you have the original red, white, and blue Social Security cards, of course, it's kind of a joke that it says right on it, not to be used for identification purposes. Well,
I know. And it's, you know, what's so funny is that the Medicare card is just your Social Security number with a letter after it.
Right.
So anyone can see it. And what was fascinating, and this goes way back to 1990s when HIPAA came out, one of the rules that was in HIPAA was that insurance cards could no longer have the Social Security number as
right.
the identifier.
Right.
And if you look, Blue Cross has changed. You know, all the insurers ultimately changed. They had about 3 years to change, and they figured out a way to give people brand new numbers.
Right.
The government ultimately exempted itself, sound familiar, because they couldn't figure out a way to give new numbers.
Right, right. It, well,
now,
it was...
it's our most vulnerable people, seniors, walking around with their Social Security card, and they hand it to the person at Rite Aid, the person at CVS, and God knows who else. And I just think it's appalling. And so this is the government that we're supposed to trust with this whole new healthcare system, and they couldn't figure out how to give people secure Medicare numbers.
Right. They can intercept every phone call, keep it in a database in Utah for the rest of our natural lives, sort it, and look through it, but they can't possibly do this. Now, of course, the guy who wound up with the 2,400 Social Security numbers, it wasn't lost on me that was in a, it was an old Excel file, unencrypted, of course, but if this is the software the government is using, we can flip over all the cards now. It's over.
Oh, absolutely. That scares me the most. I'm paranoid enough about people getting hold of your private information. But this, even with the law, they're allowed to share the information across seven different agencies.
Right.
And those are the agencies they're allowed to share with. So imagine the ones that it just happens to slip through.
Well, first thing I thought of is prison labor. I'll bet you that'll get involved in this. You know, very often, they're the people making your plane reservations and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if half of this is outsourced into known criminals.
Oh, I wouldn't put it past them. Clearly, they don't really care, is what you know, so many times the question is, does Obama really care? And the answer is no.
Well, it neither does anybody else, which is the problem. You know, when our choice was, we had the choice of Obama or Romney, who did it in Massachusetts already, this is not a fair choice. There's got to be another option on this list. And, you know, so I worry not about Obama there now. I worry about the system for forevermore. And I look at this, and the conspiracy side of me says, wait a minute. Maybe this is by design. How are they going to further control us when this goes nuts? Because it is going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm. But then that's why this whole path to single payer,
right.
it makes sense that as it collapses and people are sitting there having spent their money on something and getting nothing for it, then somebody's going to come to the rescue and say, okay, this is how we can take care of it. This
right.
is how we can take care of it quickly. They will demonize the insurance companies, just how Hillary Clinton tried to demonize physicians back in the 90s, and physicians didn't speak up enough and say, no, we aren't monsters. We aren't pigs feeding at the trough of human misery. But that's the narrative that has to be made to get people to turn to the government for the right answer.
Right. And again, that's the Hegelian dialectic, and it works too well. And I made the mistake of ordering Hillary's health care when I was in San Diego when that came out. And they asked me, you know, you just want the synopsis. I said, oh, no, I want the whole thing. The radio station had to pay over $1,000 in copying charges to get me this thing. It was damn near as tall as Iowa. I couldn't believe it. So, you know, then they said to me, you got it, you read it. So I did get through most of it. And what really killed me about that is the word criminal appeared. It had to be on a basis of 10 to 1 or greater than the word medical. I mean, criminal was all over Hillary's bill. And, of course, you know, this is exactly what Obamacare is. It's Hillary Care or any of them. And the problem with single payer is, of course, again, not the fact that our taxes might rise 100%, not even the fact that overall care might decline. The problem is that care becomes non-existent. We do the NHS horror of the day, and I don't have to look for stories. They just kind of come to me. And every day you hear another absolute horror of people who are dead now because of the NHS and the care that they were just not given.
The thing that's interesting when this whole issue comes up is what so many people don't realize is that in England, in Ireland, there's a parallel healthcare system. If you can afford it, you can get doctors who are outside the system. And what scares me here is this whole meme of everybody is treated equally, but we'll all be treated equally poorly.
Right.
And then if there is a whole movement where there's almost like an underground group of private physicians, you've made the two-tiered system even worse because only the very rich will be able to get care from somebody who's in true private practice. And then everybody else will just be, you know, another chunk of cattle on the ranch. And this is just wrong.
And it's much worse in terms of the kind of money you have to have, because the way the NHS works it, if they deny your cancer treatment, for instance, and you say, I'll private pay, they take away all your treatment. They will not allow you to private pay some of it. If they catch you private pay any of it, they revoke you from the system. So only the truly, because most people say, well, if I had to, I'd come up with this. No, you lose everything when you play that game. And that makes it virtually impossible for anybody who's not related to the royal family to take on that in a catastrophic situation. Canada, at least, you know, if they say you got to wait 9 months for an MRI, you come up with the money, you're next in line.
You know, that's right.
They don't take anything away, at least. But yeah.
Or they come across the border, Buffalo and
Minnesota.
You know,
sure.
Yes, Minnesota. Lots and lots of Canadians go.
Yeah, and we have been, because we've lived on both sides of the border, we've been the safety valve for the Canadian healthcare system. When one of the big leaders in Newfoundland needed heart surgery, he went to the Miami Heart Institute. And
that was so funny.
Wasn't that great? So, yeah, exactly. And he tried to justify it. But nobody else in Newfoundland was going there. So we're going to no longer be their safety valve soon. And the only hope we have is for people to believe what you're saying. Because I know that people who are involved with being involved with the healthcare industry, they know, whether they're doctors or whether they've been patients who are unfortunately regular consumers, they got a good clue. Everybody else will tell us that we're anti-Obama. And that's so scary, especially when they devolve it to, well, if you think that, you must be a racist.
Please.
You know, yeah. There's nowhere to go when they pull that card out.
Well, there's absolutely nothing you can say. And that's when it's great to be black, that they can try to call me a racist, but they can't. And about all you can say is, yeah, I'm a racist, let's move on.
Yeah.
It's because you can't start denying it, and they know that. It's racist or homophobe, and that's what everyone is called for having a difference of opinion. And I tell my husband all the time, if they keep this stuff up, and if Eric Holder blames everything on racism, then nobody's ever going to want another black leader again. They'll be afraid that they'll blame all their wrongdoings on racism. And it's sad because as far as I'm concerned, this has set black people back and not moved them forward using excuses like this rather than coming out and saying, yeah, it was a bad idea, or yeah, I made a mistake here, or whatever. But clearly, it's not racism. And it took white people to get Obama elected, hello. So it wasn't just black people that got him elected. So everybody is not a racist.
No, and it is counterproductive. You take people like Thomas Sowell, who you hear black leaders who will occasionally say, you know, elected black officials who will say, well, he's not authentic. What? I can't even dignify he's not authentic. So now the theory is, depending upon the amount of melanin in your skin, that determines what your political viewpoint should be, or you're not authentic. It sets everything behind, but it's effective because, as the Marxists said in the beginning, if you can divide and conquer, that's how you won. And they'll use any tool unashamedly that they can get.
And what's sad to me is it demeans black people of thinking they all have to think alike. And it's like, no, hello, we have our own brains, and we can think in many different ways, just like white people can think in many different ways. And it's always funny to me when they say something about the black community as though all black people live in the same block and think the same thing. But that's done on purpose.
Of course.
People think very differently, and then going back to what you said way back when about do people just think the fix is in, I think that's one reason why a lot of people don't even bother to speak up, that it's just not worth it, it's not worth possibly having your friends shun you,
right.
So you just keep your mouth shut.
Right. No, I very much think that there is a lot of pressure that way. And it is, I've said many times on the air, if they ever claim that all white people thought the same way because they were white, that would be ridiculous. No one would buy that. Why will they accept it from the quote-unquote tribal leaders, the Jesse Jacksons of the world, who say, I represent anyone of color? No, you don't. But we're seeing this now, things like Common Core. It's getting off subject, of course, but when you're saying that, well, the African American students should have lower standards, that, and they're doing that in these states, that, to me, sets everything back to its 1950.
Oh, and it's an insult.
Of course.
My goodness. So you're back to Woodrow Wilson in the 20s and eugenics and people saying, deciding that black people are stupid. Therefore, a C for a black person is the same as an A for a white person. It's just wrong. And when people get sucked in, but some of the loudest mouths, let's say, are a black mother who's had their child come home and say the teacher said a C was okay.
Yeah.
And when you have an interested parent and they go over to the school and tear the teacher a new one for even suggesting that, that's the kind of voices we need to hear in the black community.
Yeah.
And none of this accepting that black students are okay if they don't perform as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. My best girlfriend, I remember a story from her youth. She was told, oh dear, well, you're not good in math. You're not supposed to be. Inferring that she was not only black, but she was female. Her mother literally did tear that school apart in Shaker Heights, Ohio. And her father was one of the leading pediatricians there. And so, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. He was, honored in all sorts of ways. And he says, my daughter's not supposed to know math, you know. But far too many people accept it. And some of the teachers accept it not because they're racist so much as they don't want to have to be held to the standards that everybody has to learn. So they're like, okay, well, good. I get off on this. Fine. So.
And sometimes my son used to teach high school, and he was at an inner city school, and they got a principal, and it was when he left after being with his principal for about a year, who actually told him not to have the kids write essays because some people in the class weren't native English speakers, and they wouldn't write so well. And he told the principal, isn't this the point? That if they write an essay, then I can show them where their problems are,
right.
And I'll take it into consideration when I do the grading. And he would have none of it. He just set a low standard for the students, and then that makes the teacher have to set a low standard. And you get teachers who want to spend the time with the students, and it's almost as if they're in subtle ways told not to.
Yeah, yeah, and not subtle ways, outright, because then the principal doesn't look good if the teachers actually are able to show that the kids need more attention.
It's very funny. One of the kids from his school got into Harvard, and so everybody was waiting for some sort of I beat the man kind of story or something. And when they interviewed her and said, how did you do it? She said, I did my homework every day and studied hard. You know, not the narrative they wanted to hear.
Right. So that was off the news in about 10 minutes.
Well, exactly.
Charles in Tennessee wants to join in. So, Charles, welcome.
Hello. Something that came to me just in the past few weeks, and I'll throw it at both you all and you can toss it around. The reason we all know they're fighting tooth and nail to keep this, and the reason why is, who's the most powerful person in the tribe? Not the chief, not the priest.
The medicine man.
Medicine man, the healer. That is the most powerful person. So by getting control of that, it's life and death. That's just what it's all about.
I don't doubt it.
That's the motivation. And when you look at it at the primitive level, if you go to the most primitive culture, they all cower at the feet of the person that has life and death in their hands for them.
Well, this is one of the things, I mean, you really got it when we were discussing the physician extenders. It's a way, first you demean the physician, you make it where, no, they're not such a big deal. Anybody can do this. Mm-hmm. Your next door neighbor can do this. Then that's half the battle is over. And then the health care law is the other half of the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Warren Buffett really did back up today, didn't he?
Oh, you probably saw that, Dr. Singleton, where they unearthed some 2010 comments where he was dead set against Obamacare, and it came out, and then he got on the news doing backflips. Oh, no, out of context. I didn't mean that. Yeah. All right, Charles. Thanks for calling.
See you back.
All right. So it's there are no words to describe what's coming, Dr. Singleton. And every doctor I talk to who is not in debt or hasn't just started his own clinic or built a building, virtually every one of them is saying, I'm going to retire. Now, even if only a percentage of them do, this is a shortage. How many doctors are going to be speaking English here in 5 years?
Not too many, and you go back, and how many doctors will you even see? One of the things that struck me when I read the health care law was many places, number one, that whole law is a whole bunch of amendments to other things,
right.
So you spend your whole time backtracking to what the earlier law was that it's amending,
right.
Is many, many paragraphs were amended to where it used to say, to the physician.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've added on physician or physician's assistant or nurse. That's all through the law.
Yeah.
So that's very clear what they're trying to do. Pretty soon there will be a big X through the physician, and then it just gets to be the assistant or nurse.
Who in their right mind?
Scary.
It is scary. Who in their right mind? What young person today, unless they were just from such a position of wanting to help worldwide and they were going to go live in El Salvador or something, who in their right mind would take on the level of time and debt to become a doctor with this in front of them?
This is the thing. I think it'll be, probably another half generation before being a doctor will be like being a dog catcher. And I hope it never becomes that. But there still is a nobility to the profession. And there's plenty of people that really feel that Hippocrates feeling about being a doctor and helping people. They might become something else that doesn't cost you $250,000 by the time you're finished with it all. I don't know. Maybe they'll become a social worker instead. But there sure is nothing like saving somebody's life. It feels so good, and there's nothing so sadder than when somebody dies underneath you. But these are the ups and downs that people choose, and on the whole, 99% of it is good. And it hurts to think that the government is trying to really demean a profession just for their own Marxist goals.
Yes, and that's precisely where we are right now. At the moment, we still can find an AAPS physician and go around the system, go this privately. I agree that I'm very afraid where this loophole is going down the road. If we cannot scrap this system, and it doesn't look hopeful, at the very least, I hope people are aware that they have alternatives and fight to keep them. In some states, even if they wind up going to, say, a naturopath for certain things when they want to stay out of the system. Other states, that's absolutely illegal. There's many modalities that are going to be thrown into Obamacare. And what's sad to me is the amount of alternative physicians who are clamoring to get in because they think that they'll get a piece of the reimbursements. Like, stay out. I'm very afraid where this is going. Timetable wise, how long do you think we have till it's endangered that we will be able to see someone privately?
Oh, I think it's going to be a few years out, so maybe 2019.
Okay.
It has to, one, all the provisions will finally go in by 2018 and the tax penalties and whatnot, and that's when the rubber is really going to meet the road. But by then, I think we will start having a groundswell of people who didn't get what they bargained for or told they were going to get. And hopefully this malaise, this apathy, will kind of break. Now, we'll have a new president by then. Who knows what kind of president? And maybe that'll be a big help, too. And that's what I have my fingers crossed, that once we have a new president, there might actually be a chance of somebody throwing this whole thing in the trash.
I sure hope you're right. Between now and then, I really appreciate you taking the time to fight the good fight, because without folks like you, Dr. Singleton, we're lost. It's your words that are going to reach people, and I thank you for doing that.
Oh, I'm just thankful for the opportunity to talk about it some more and in another venue, and thank you for keeping this alive and letting people know it's not completely a done deal if we keep on fighting, keep on asking questions, and demanding what we want.
From your lips to God's ears, as they say. Let's keep it up, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Dr. Marilyn Singleton, MD, JD. I'll have links to AAPSonline.org. They're permanently on the site, but also to some of Marilyn's writings as well. All right. Do you know there's an Obamacare board game out? Yeah, it's not surprising. It's selling well. We'll pick that up.
It's the Raleigh James Show.